produced more Breeders' Cup champions. And no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half, more or less, of this Wednesday edition at the races. Sid Fernando joining us, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Sid, you know, Sid's taking advantage now of living in Tampa for the winter. And you know, he's showing up in paparazzi photographs in the winner's circle at Oldsmar. Clearly you're enjoying the new winter digs. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. It's funny you should say that because I'm just outside on my backyard deck right now. And you're absolutely right, bro. I mean, really enjoying it.
I love that picture that Chuck put up, and there was a nice outing, right? That Stable Duel had a bunch of, there was a nice crowd of people at Tampa on Saturday, and you know, it's almost always beautiful. And it's funny because there had been a forecast over the weekend, not so great for Tampa, but it looked like it was really nice. And then you got a winner with a horse that, the five-year-old Sherrill Spite, that you probably put the mating together.
Well, to tell you the truth, you know, Chuck did his own matings, but I did enjoy that. It all happened by chance, by the way, because I'll tell you what happened really was, you mentioned the bad weather. Chuck and Barry Spears were supposed to come to my house on Sunday, and I was going to, you know, fire up the grill, but the forecast was for bad weather
right
on Sunday, so I told them I'd meet him at the track on Saturday instead, so I could meet him, you know, chit-chat with him, and so that's what happened, and I had no idea about Stable Duel. Barry told me to come up to that spot, and, you know, the people were great. Two of the owners, Pete and Bree Mott, you know, they were real welcoming, and, you know, Pete got us, you know, they got us lunch in the clubhouse, food, and Chuck was there, Barry, my man, Spears, and, you know, it just turned into a great outing, and I knew this horse really was going to win, so parked myself right near the winner's circle right before the race, and I called Chuck up, Chuck 50, and I said, you know, Chuck, make sure you let me into the winner's circle. They let me into the winner's circle here. But that was before the race, and he said, wow, you're kind of confident, aren't you? And I said, that's why I'm parked here. And so that was great. I got the exact on that. And, yeah, it was a great time.
I love it. I love it. And actually, third choice, too, paid 1040.
Yeah, exactly. It was real nice price on him because it was, you know, it's just the second race back in a year, and the first one was on the dirt, and it was back on the surface he wanted. So that's good. And I'm making a second racetrack appearance, by the way, for the Pegasus.
Oh, you're going to go over to Gulfstream. Nice, nice. Actually,
yeah, Lady Spice Spear is running that day.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I actually exchanged. No, I'll be in Vegas. That's NHC weekend.
Oh yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
So we'll be out there. But in fact, because Dave, I exchanged a note with Dave Josephs. Asked me if I was coming, and I've never been. NHC has conflicted with it at least 3 times, and obviously not last year, but for whatever reason, it just has not been, it is not set. Actually, I'm trying to think if maybe I went to the first one. Maybe I went to the first one. I can't. I got to look. I've got to look through my photos. And figure out if I was at the first one or not. Which was the one you had California Chrome and what, an Arrogate?
Yeah.
And I'm gonna have to go back and look.
I've never been.
Yeah. Oh, you'll enjoy. You know, it's a spectacle. It's a 3-ring circus.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Oh, by the way, I meant to tell you, I got a new listener for you today. I was talking to Bernie Sams at Claiborne earlier today, and I said, you know, you ought to listen to Steve Bick. I said, I'm on Wednesday, and so I sent over your link, and Bern, I hope you're listening, bro.
Well, Bern, and Bernie's, he's been on many times over the years.
Yeah, of course.
And has been a guest, absolutely. I've got quite a bit. I wanted to start with that, and because it was, you know, right on top of things. There's a couple of notes that I think we sort of touched on last week, Jared Burdine of Hillendale's going to join us tomorrow. I was trying to get him to fuse with you today, but he's got something that was keeping him busy 10 to 12 today. So Jared's going to be on tomorrow. We're going to do what we promised in terms of helping people, you know, get kind of a roadmap about, you know, what the system is and how it works to, you know, get your mayor. If you're going to ship a mayor to Kentucky, for instance, Jared's going to, you know, kind of hold your hand and take you through the.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
good. He's a good man.
It'll be great. But the funny thing is that it also ties in to the piece you wrote for this week at TDN and taking stock. And
yeah, no, it does.
It fuses, right?
Yeah, it really does. And in fact, that's why Bernie had called me this morning.
About the piece.
Yeah, no, it was like, it's so dead on, and, you know, how are we going to change this stuff? By the way, I just got a text from him that said he is listening.
I love it.
But no, it's true. You know, parts of that, by the way, you can get, you know, say somebody sending a mare in, you know, I mentioned some of the deals he can get for some of these third and fourth year horses, for example. You know, regardless of what people say the stud fee is, you can actually, you know, say you're a home breeder from New York State and you want to send a horse in, and, you know, Jared could tell you, you know, where to, you know, a satellite farm or wherever, you know, the farms in it. You can find farms in all sorts of price ranges to board. Then on top of that, say, you know, you're not a commercial breeder, so you want to breed to a third or fourth year horse to get some value. You're going to get some great discounts in stud fees because, like I mentioned in that piece, the commercial breeders don't want to go to those horses. But like I mentioned in that piece, Steve, you know, if you really want to breed to race nowadays, you got a great opportunity because the purse structure is so high, you know. And there's all sorts of opportunities, I think, right now for smaller guys to capitalize because small guys and big guys are in the same thing with the purses. And, you know, the purse money really dictates so much. And if you can get in, breed a horse, you see how lucrative some of these maiden specials are.
There's a few parts of this that we can associate with a theme that seems to come up over and over again, no matter what level anybody operates at, as either a breeder or as a horse player, as an owner, and that is the influence of what your plan is, Sid, and what your goals are. And one of the things you mentioned was the idea of approaching a farm that may have a tough to get to stallion that you really want to get to, whether it's for racing purpose or for commercial purpose, but then, you know, offering a couple of, whether it's one or more of your other mares to them for coverage by somebody that might be, you know, less fashionable, somebody whose book they're trying to fill out. And this all comes down to, and I think about this because your column covers the area that you know, for many years, Satish Sanand would explain, which is the economics of a stallion. And Satish offered that in public. I don't think it had ever been done, 12, 13 years ago. And he literally explained every financial element and, you know, down to the stud fee times the number of covers and over a period of blank years, you know, that the formula, essentially, he opened the books for people to understand that. And you make that reference in this column. Frankly, no matter what size breeder you are, whether you have one mare or whether you have a burgeoning broodmare band, the farms will work with you, and frankly, the later it gets in the season, the better the deals are going to be.
Oh, yeah. Now, in general, the later you get into the season, it's always a better deal because, you're going to get a later cover, and farms are willing to, they've got some space now, and so it's easier to get into a horse at that point, and they'll take you, on a deal really frequently, particularly, if you're a second, third, or fourth year horse. All horses tend to get, they tend to be easier to get to. For example, I booked mares for some, I only booked mares for just some of our biggest clients. I don't do it for everybody, but I booked mares for, a client, say, that wants to get into, say, a big horse, but he's already booked foals. So frequently a stallion manager will, say something like this to me. He goes, well, listen, why don't you get back to me, in April. Look, the mare's not foaling till, May 1. Why don't you touch base, or April 1 or whatever, once you touch base later in the season, and we'll see what the scheduling is, and we'll try and fit her in at that point. So he doesn't want to make a commitment earlier, but he will later. Now, that's, say, for a really fashionable horse. For a horse that, you know, has plenty of space, you know, they'll take your arm off to come in and give you a deal at that point. So these are some of the things that, if you're just looking at it from the outside, you see stud fees advertised and whatnot. It's not always the case. You know, you get to know guys, you talk to guys, and like I said in that piece, you know, people want as many mares as possible. Now, particularly for first-year horses, you know, I mentioned people try to front-load them because they need to get as many mares as possible to make an impression with their first two-year-olds, because the way the commercial market is set up right now, if you don't have a good run with your two-year-olds, think about this. The next year when you breed, that horse is going to have three-year-olds running, and now that's his fifth year at stud. So who wants to go to a horse in his fifth year at stud if there's not some success with the two-year-old? So that's why it's such a short leash for some of these stallions, you know? And I gave you the example of Daredevil. He was sent to Turkey after his first two-year-olds ran. And so he was in Turkey when the three-year-olds came up, and of course he had Swiss Skydiver and She Dares the Devil, and boom, the jockey club of Turkey that owned the horse decided to bring him back and stand him with under their ownership at Lane's End, which is the newer thing taking place now, you know, a foreign entity. So there's all sorts of stuff that are, you know, that's starting to happen that we haven't seen before. And it's a really fluid marketplace. And I think it's a great spot, particularly if you want to breed to race, because there are plenty of young stallions out there. You know, again, depending on what your program is and whatnot, but plenty of young stallions out there that have potential, and because of the way the market is structured, you know, they're priced fairly attractively. And like I was talking to Bernie today, you know, you got all these horses going to stud for, you know, massive amounts of money, say $50,000 or above, or, you know, the young horses, you know, 70 and some kind of essential quality. But, you know, you look back at some of the big ones we got right now, Into Mischief, Tappet, Warfront, all three of those were started off at $15,000 or less. So you got a shot. If you look around and play your opinions, like we said before.
Yeah, and on that front, you know, one thing that you also discussed was, you know, the pending situation regarding the Jockey Club trying to get this 140 cap to covers. And that if it survives legal challenge, which we seem to say that about everything, yeah, of right. late that comes, if it survives legal challenge, it essentially is going to force mares to a potentially wider array of, you know, particularly, obviously, it's first year, you know, particularly the first year stallions that this is going to affect. And by rights, it seems to, we haven't discussed it since the initial concept and, you know, when we first got reaction to it, Sid. But, you know, on the surface, it would seem to promote biodiversity, assuming that, you know, some unusual, you know, potential stallions get opportunities. And it does seem that the marketplace, it sure feels like you know, the big commercial breeders are quite willing, not even just the big commercial, but the regional breeders even are willing to, you know, offer some opportunity for, you know, some international types. I saw an ad, in fact, the stallion that the Dansili that is out of the Goldakova sister that is being advertised, and
in a regional place.
Yeah, and right. And yeah, well, here in New York, what about Slumber? Slumber's a good example, and Calumet tried with Americane, and you know, John Secura has tried this, you know, several different times, whether with what Indigo Shiner, and you would think that some of those that, you know, that got chances along these lines would potentially, you know, have a better chance under, you know, under this scenario, if there's going to be mares forced, you know, to, I don't want to call them second tier stallions, but you know, if an Into Mischief and a Curlin and a Spitestown, you know, are limited to 140 covers, well, that's going to, you know, that right there, that's probably 220 mares that are going to need to go elsewhere.
Keep in mind that this rule is grandfathered so that the Into Mischief and the Curlins are always going to be
right.
Whoever they want. But to your point, and I mentioned that in the column, the 140 limit isn't going to change the paradigm of people still wanting to go to first-year horses. What it's going to do is what you just said. It's going to have more first-year horses out there.
Yes.
And, of course, what that's going to mean, as you said, is it's going to give more diversity. And also, most of these horses are going to be less expensive, too, because, you know, you're not going to have a bunch of more expensive horses out there. That stays, you know, pretty much one way. But you've got a bunch of horses under them that could go to stud. It's going to increase more horses at stud. So guys are going to be able to, you know, have more opportunity to see different bloodlines too because of that. I mean, just at Claiborne, to use an example, Demarchelier, the Peter Brand horse by Dubawi, standing for 5,000, right? That's a great example of a horse now that's available and very inexpensively for any state breeding program or regional breeder to come and ship to as well. So you're going to have more horses at stud, but if this commercial paradigm holds, what's going to happen is it's going to increase the churn and burn, as I pointed out, because the same thing's going to happen, though, for commercial breeding purposes. Nobody's going to want to go into these horses in their third and fourth years, right? So more of them are going to keep, you know, you're going to have more coming in and more going out. But the positive in that is that you're going to have some horses that are going to get shot at stud. And so say a horse does get a shot at stud, and say he, even if he does get exported and he has success later, well, the new paradigm also says that these foreign entities are willing to send them back here now to stand under their ownership. You know, Nick's Go is owned by the Koreans. Daredevil is now owned by the, you know, the jockeys up in Turkey. So there's all sorts of, you know, stuff that's going to happen that nobody really thought about could happen. But the net result for the breeder, say you, Steve, who breeds horses, you're going to have a greater array of stallions to choose from. And because there's more competition, you're going to be able to get better pricing. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you're sitting on the next tap at Into Mischief or Warfront when you breed and raise.
Well, we've gotten lucky. I mean, with your broodmare compatibility analysis assistance, I think we're already sitting on 3 for 3 in terms of decision making. We can bring this home for people, you know, to understand the financial dynamics. I mean, you got us into Motown. At Ashford, at Coolmore, and at the tail end of a season, then we came back. Then we came back with Country Life and Mosler, and we're going to probably go back. Looks like we're going back to Mosler. The baby's not due for a couple of months, but
and
I think we're going right.
That's a great mating, by the way. That's a great mating because Mosler's a war front. And your mare is an arch line mare, and you know that warfront arch cross is so potent. And so you're reproducing that cross with, you know, a stallion that's shown some potential, some really big potential at Country Life. That stallion Mosler, by the way, I still believe he's still owned by Seth Hancock's Cherry Valley, partly anyway.
Well, and is getting winners. Then we really caught a crazy wave, making the decision with Carlisle Bell, and you got Leah Frick. We had Volterine already, basically boarding at Rock Ridge, and we ended up going to Leah Frick at your recommendation. Next thing I know, he's moved to Kentucky, and so. We may strike gold with a Leah Frick baby.
And not only that, but Leah Frick is by Candy Ride. He's a grade one winner. And you caught the wave of Gunrunner, son of Candy Ride, lighting it up last year, right? Same thing you did with the Motown. You caught the wave of Uncle Moe's three sons just lighting it up with their first crops, Outwork, Laoban, and most significantly, Nyquist. So, that's the kind of stuff you want to try to do to get the best chances that you have. You know, you pick a real sire line on the up and up, you hit it, and, you wait, nothing's guaranteed, obviously, but at least you've done your homework and you've got yourself situated in as best a state as possible.
You give yourself a chance. If you're going to race, you're doing it. I don't think it's unfair to or insulting to say on a shoestring. None of those three covers, Mosler, Leah Frick, and Motown, none of them were over $7,500. They were between and $7,500.
That's a great deal. And two of them are Grade One winners.
And when we look at the two mares, you basically are breeding something that could go either way in terms of surface. They could turf potentially. They could dirt. You're giving yourself a chance to get a runner of some kind.
Yeah, that's extremely true. And I want to use another example just from this weekend when I was at Tampa. The filly outfoxed that won the stake of the Gasparilla, I think. She's from the first crop of the Candy Ride horse, the Gray Candy Ride too, another Gray Candy Ride. That's at Bridalwood Farm, owned by the Lewis of Bale.
Valiant Minister.
Valiant Minister, yeah. I'd actually done a piece on that horse because I actually went out there to take a look at him. He was a once raced Candy Ride, been in Baffert's barn, won that race big. They took a shot, and so he's over there, right? Now, you take a look at Outfoxed, who won. And so what did what did the Lewes do? They sent the Cantheros mare to Candy Ride. Cantheros is a Storm Cat line stallion. That Candy Ride Storm Cat cross is really, really good. And so what they were doing, as you were doing with your archmare going to Mosler, is trying to set yourself up in the best possible manner. And so, the arch cross is great with a Warfront. The Storm Cat line cross is great with Candy Ride. And if you look at Gunrunner Stakes winners this year, most of them have Storm Cat in the pedigree. Gunrunner himself is based on that cross. He's by Candy Ride out of a Giants Causeway mare. So that's a cross of Candy Ride and Storm Cat. And a lot of his foals this year, the stakes winners, have that Storm Cat in the pedigree too, so there's an inbreeding Storm Cat there. And so it's interesting with this Valiant Minister who only stood for $3,000, by setting themselves up in the proper way, they set this Cantheros mare, and that foal that the Lewes sold was later pinhooked, I think by Larry Zapp and a group of people, had purchased her, and she sold for like $300,000 as a two-year-old to Ellen J. Foxwoods, $250,000, $300,000, something like that. And now she's become a stakes winner. So that's operating at a shoestring and having success. But you've set yourself up in the best way possible, you know? And those are some of the things that smaller breeders can pay attention to. They can look for smaller stallions and, again, it's like handicapping a race. Get your opinion, see what you like, and go accordingly. I mean, in betting, you want to try to have a plus EV bet. Well, the same thing here. I mean, attempt a plus EV maiden, you know what I mean? there's a lot of similarities to it, And bro, you're on the right track, and I'm really hoping one of yours hits so that, we can say we worked with Steve and got something going.
Well, we hope so, and looking forward to, coming back this year. And I already mentioned, in fact, it came up, I think we mentioned it in the last couple of weeks, going right to Rock Ridge, going to Combatant when after this Leofric, because that seems like the natural, next step, and back to country life for Mosler for, and I imagine, I mean, I got to think with given how big her first foal was, the Motown, mm-hmm. and he. I sent you the short yearling picture.
Strong.
I mean, he's just a tank. He's a big bruising looking colt.
Yeah, he's got that Uncle Mo look to him, already.
Good. Well, I'm going to guess now that she's already carried one baby, and I got to get down to Rock Ridge. In fact, maybe we'll go this weekend because I have not seen her. This winter, she's already a big mare herself, and now she's five, and I imagine she's going to get a big rangy baby with Mosler. So, looking forward to that.
I'm really expecting that foal to do well. I'm very positive on the way you're approaching all this. And you've been using something that you've talked about here on this program. I think we should mention it again. Regional stallions. You used Leo Frick. And, of course, he went to Kentucky now. But you're using Mosler, who's percolating as a regional horse in Maryland at Country Life. Think about Combatant, a grade one winning son of Stormcat. Okay? In California, I just saw that Halliday has been retired to stud over there.
I saw that too, yep.
Grade one winner by Warfront out of a Tappet mare. So there's lots of opportunity. That's what I'm talking about. Rushy is now at Pleasant Acres in Florida. Grade 2 winner by Liam's Map, who's on fire. Liam's Map's got two really fast horses at stud in Kentucky that are going to get a lot of attention. And that's Basin at Spencer at 75, won the Grade 1 hopeful, as well as Bo Liam, who's not a stakes winner, but has a, you know, like 3-for-4 or something, and it has, you know, eye-popping speed figures, and he's controlled by or partly owned by Stone Street, who gave you similar types of horses with McLean's Music at Hillendale, Cantharos at Hillendale now, but started off in Florida. And so, you know, in this marketplace, this is exactly what I'm talking about. There's opportunities now. I feel like there's more opportunity now than we've had in a decade.
Well, and that course coming off of one thing I haven't brought up, the results from last week, the delayed January sale, and of course we turn to OBS next week as well. We got I think what, the 25th and 26th, right? Yeah, Tuesday and Wednesday. We've got the next set of racing age and assorted stock going through the ring. And Sid, you know, we only had one day of results when we talked last week, but the rest of the sale, you know, basically went swimmingly, and the demand for you know, for broodmares and the short yearling market was very, very healthy. So you know, despite what certain, you know, certain people want to characterize, things seem healthier than anyone, you know, cares to admit.
Yeah, I think so. I really think that in the next couple of years, we're going to probably see a reverse of this declining fall crop. I mean, it just makes sense, Steve, just from, like, you know, the stuff we're talking about. With a purse is up and stud fees in general down. Interest in mares at these sales up, which means that, yeah, sure, everybody's still breeding for a commercial marketplace, but there's a opportunity to breed and race yourself, because when you have production, when you have stud fees lower, it allows you to produce a horse at a much, at a significantly lower cost. So, you know, say you're producing a horse at a lower cost than you go out and buy one, and with purse structures, you know, high, at least some people are going to start doing this more. I mean, that just makes sense to me on pure economics, you know, pure math.
Exactly.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Sid, I also want to slip in one other thing, and in fact, when you mentioned Giant's Causeway, it made me think of it. I talked with in the first hour with Kevin Kirstein from Churchill about the second Derby wager pool, and one thing that jumped out at me, actually, the presence of Giant's Causeway himself with two sons, and his son, Not This Time, with three sons. So 23 betting interests. And Giant's Causeway's got Giant Game and that classic Causeway. Not This Time has got Chasing Time. Not Chasing Time. Right? Chasing Time, I think. And Epicenter and Simplification. They're the only stallions. Actually, Munnings, I think, has got two as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. Munnings has got Jack Christopher and Dash Attack. But then after that, the other 17 are you know, represented by individual stallions, kind of all over the place, actually. But Giant's Causeway and Not This Time kind of jumped off the page when you mentioned that.
Yeah, and actually, not this time fits into this profile of the type of stallion we're talking about that's attractive. You know, what did he make? Three starts or four max, one, two of three or three or four, got hurt and went to stud at age three. Brilliant physical, great-looking horse. You know, stood for 15,000 his first year. And, you know, now he's at 45,000. There's another horse you could have gotten early, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, imagine if you're breeding to a horse like that and you see how they're doing, right? And you got in inexpensively, relatively. Those are all the types of opportunities we're talking about. And, you know, John's Causeway also has Bodie's Cause, you know, who got a grade one winner from his first crop, that Baffert filly that won the, was it the La Brea or something in California? Bodie's Cause. I can't remember the name.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah. I know what you mean.
5,000.
Yep.
You know, Protonico, by the way, the sire of Medina Spirit stands for 10.
Calypso.
Yeah, Calypso, exactly, with a K. And, yeah, so there's all these opportunities out there. And, you know, it's like I was telling Bernie, for a lot of owner breeders, we're actually recommending some stallions we like in their third year, fourth year, because they're not selling. And so they can get really good discounts on stud fees and get into the same type of horse now in the third year, say, that it would have been impossible, say, in the first year. So, again, to tie everything back in how you started this conversation, do your research, you know, and if you want that option to be able to breed a horse to race, you're going to find it right now at a much more affordable price point vis-a-vis purses than you have in a while.
Well, and here, let me give them, before we go, I'll give the rundown because I've got the PPs in front of me. Not This Time, who is a TaylorMade, and we mentioned those three, Simplification, Epicenter, Chasing Time. And, you know, then Giant's Causeway, who's gone, but Giant Game and Classic Causeway. You've got Union Rags has got one in here, and, of course, at Lane's End, Command Performance, the Pletcher Rapoli Viola. Tappet has got one right now in this round of Derby Futures, and, of course, at Gainesway, Crevassier. For Kelly Breen and Helen Dale. Dash Attack is Munnings. Actually, Munnings has got two, I mentioned. Dash Attack and Jack Christopher. More Than Ready at Windstar. More Than Ready has got Emmanuel for Pletcher, Windstar and Sienna Farm. How about Gormley, who's Spendthrift,
right? $5,000 set fee.
Yeah, that's our friend Leon Seidler with High Oak. Constitution, another Windstar. This is Major General that Circular Road Breeders bred and then was a $420,000 yearling. How about Neolithic? You mentioned Pleasant Acres before.
Yeah.
He's at Pleasant Acres, right?
Yeah, he's at Pleasant Acres, and there's that horse, that regional horse that, you know, boom, first crop, and he's got a Derby horse.
Make it big. This is
yeah.
This was the winner for the Brunettis. It's nice to have the Brunettis potentially on the Derby trail. That horse is undefeated. For those that forgot that, out of the Springboard Mile, Uncle Mo, he's got a pretty good stud career going at Ashford. He's got Mo Donegal. Gunrunner, who you know set records as a freshman sire, is the sire of Papa Cap in here for Mark Cassie and the Homebred by Russell Wood. You know, one thing that's notable, and of course we're far from the Derby yet, but there's way less homebreds on this list than we've seen of late, Sid, and that may be a developing storyline.
Yeah, because
think about that. Lane's End's Connect has got Rattle and Roll, one of those two for the Lucky Seven people, and McPeak. Nyquist, back to here's the son of Uncle Mo at Darley, right. Slow Down Andy. Claiborne has got Run Happy and Smile Happy. That's the other McPeak Lucky Seven. Hit It a Bomb, who's at Spendthrift. There you go. $5,000 stallion that fetched 330. Spendthrift put him through the ring. 330,000 as a yearling, bought by Phoenix. The late Lord Nelson. And here's Lord Nelson, Trafalgar. And he was ill-fated, boy. Into Mischief with only one runner on this particular group of Derby prospects, Verratti, the Siena homebred that is co-owned by Siena and Windstar, and then Race Day was exported, right?
He was exported. Yeah, fantastic.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He's got White Abario for. Safi Joseph and the partnership of C2 Racing and La Milagroso. And then Upstart for Airdrie. How about that? The last, Zandon and Jeff Drown. So there you go. There's a nice variety of prices. And out of curiosity, let me add it up. Let me see. The Reddams have a homebred. And I guess we'll call Verratti a homebred, technically. And Dash Attack is a homebred for Catalyst Stable and Magdalena. So that's, was that three?
Yeah.
Three homebreds, it looks like. Four. Papa Cap is a homebred. So four out of 23.
Mm-hmm.
That's always one of my... I mean, last year we had... The last few years for derbies, we've had some very... we've had a very strong representation of homebreds. Sid... As always, I knew we had a full docket today.
it was great. Yeah, terrific.
I appreciate it as always, and of course, there's still plenty of time, and we're getting close to the opening of the breeding sheds, and babies are dropping left and right. I've been letting everybody know who the first foals have been, and there were actually a couple more last night that I didn't get a chance to. To write down, but we mentioned the Vacoma and the global campaign baby and Tom's the Tot and so forth. So we'll keep that, keep informing everybody of those. And you can work with Sid and Roger at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111. Sid, thank you.
All right, Steve, appreciate it, bro. We'll talk next week.
You got it, and be sure to pull up TDN and this week's Taking Stock, which gave us the foundation to converse today. And we'll do more with Jared Burdine tomorrow. We'll talk about how you make this happen. If you got a mare, you're making a decision. Maybe you're not going to race her any longer, or you see that the end is near in terms of her racing career. This is a very good time to dip your toe in the breeding water, and anything we can do to help you, don't be shy. You can write to Sid, you can write to approach us on social media, Steve at stevebick.com, any which way, Call Sid at work, Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111, and we'll do whatever we can to help you. Let's take a break here, and we've got Trey Stiles to join us, as well as Seth Merrill in hour three here. We'll do some handicapping. We'll talk about what's gone on so far at Sam Houston with Trey, and we'll see what Seth has got for us, Tampa and Gulfstream. I know that Gus has got Tampa and Gulfstream action himself today. He's 5th through the 9th at both venues. We'll be up on the website after the show. All right? So between Gus and Seth, you'll have plenty of opinions to peruse in South Florida, on both coasts, the treasure and the Gulf. Back after this. I'm not sure, actually, if we're going to go to Seth or Trey. Trey just told me that he can come on now, so maybe we will go to Trey. All right, stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three.